Welcome to WISO Weekend, WISO's weekly radio magazine. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks for joining us. On today's program, Emily McCord has this week's Politics Ohio. Ida Liefskovsky brings us another report from State Impact Ohio. Today she'll report on school choice options. Those stories and more, but up first. On Conrad's Corner, our resident poet, Conrad Balliot, talks to Janiel Ravendahl. Also a poet, she explains.
Welcome to Conrad's Corner. From time to time, I do interviews with local poets. My guest today is Janiel Ravendahl. Hi, Janiel.
Hi, Conrad.
And you are from?
I'm from Yellow Springs.
You're right here in Yellow Springs. And you call yourself a poet?
More and more as I get older, I do.
And how old were you when you started writing poetry?
I was pretty young. I think I borrowed a verse of my mother's and took it to school, and the teacher was so pleased that I decided I was a poet, too.
Do you remember that verse?
No. I wish I did. That would be fun.
Okay. And we belong to a group of people who get together and read poetry, and we pick different subjects from time to time. My memory is that we'll pick a subject 1 week, and 2 weeks later you'll have two or three poems on that subject.
That's right. I like to do that. I like to have an assignment.
Technically, that's called occasional verse.
My mother wrote a lot of occasional verse, and I have a favorite that I'll share that was written on the occasion of our adopting our third child, whose name was Helen Louise. So the poem is called Helen Louise. And it was we used it as the adoption announcement. It was grafted to our family tree, a branch of brown mahogany. Thus nature, by some kind decree, adds beauty, strength, variety.
That's lovely. And we decided we're going to read some poems written for various occasions. We do meet here at WISO from time to time, and you have some poems about radio.
Well, yes, you gave me this assignment, so I wrote a couple about radio. This one's called Priority. Take my Facebook and my cell phone, subtract coffee, salt, red meat, nix all TV, movies, opera, forbid chocolate, all sweets. Remove carnivals and picnics, take my gems, my garden hoe, lift my heirloom lace, my iPod. But leave me my radio. Leave my kitchen counter Sony. Leave bedside clock radio. Leave the one in car and leave them tuned to WYSO.
And you even managed to rhyme radio with WYSO. Then I think you have another radio poem as well.
This one is remembering radio when I was young. Prime time then and now. No boom box then, or handheld gadget with a battery. A handsome piece of parlor furniture, clothed elegant in wood veneer, stood in the corner by our fireplace. As is true now, its news was then of war. But after school each day, with milk and cookies in my lap, I curled nearby that radio, while Inner Sanctum followed the Lone Ranger's Hi-Ho Silver.
Yeah, Hi-Ho Silver, away!
As faithfully as faithful Tonto came. Today, with the same frequency and like devotion to a humbler instrument plugged in beside our stove, I rise when rooster crows or take excursions to a dear green place. I wander with Bill Felker in each season, but measure myself most by Conrad and old Garrison, who punctuate my days with poetry.
We do indeed enjoy being here on WISO from time to time. And that sounds like a commercial for the fundraiser next year. And what other occasions have you written about?
Well, lots, because I've lived in communities where I could write even songs or, you know, write poems to melodies for the whole community to sing. Here's one that was written as a thank you. We had some dear friends who had a geodesic dome that they used as a guest house. So this is about that. Anyway, they had a wonderful garden. So this is called Garden Variety Thank You Poem. For housing us in this small dome, for knowing how to make it home, for daily treats like toilet seats and beets. For weavings, paintings, pots and flowers, walls, windows, doors and floors and showers, for working, thinking long and hard and charred. For horseshoes and a choice of swing, for maps and snacks and everything, including a whole lake to wet us and let us. For fields and rocks and evening walks, for Scrabble hearts and cozy talks, for time to play, to dream, to doze, and tomatoes. For histories and mysteries in books and paths and apple trees, for knowing what a stone wall means, and beans. For solitude and latitude, we feel tremendous gratitude, for joys from Alpha to Omega, and rutabaga.
I think the essence of poetry is pattern, and I like the pattern there. You have three longer lines and then a short line of a vegetable that rhymes. So that's very nice. And then you have one other poem about, is it about a nun?
It's about a nun who worked at Pendle Hill as a teacher, where we worked for 16 years. And the occasion of this poem was her, it wasn't actually a firing, but they were cutting down on staff, and she was one of the ones that had to go, and I was so angry, and I wrote this poem. It's called Firing Sister Nancy. She was from the Order of St. Francis. This is a woman tall enough, strong enough, clear enough, to be matter of fact about her marriage contract with God. This is a woman to whom certain ecological disaster or any other bad news means only more prayer and more work. A woman who refuses to allow herself even a hair's breadth erosion of hope. This is a woman who can hardly be imagined except laughing with her arms outstretched, who for 5 years served devotedly, questioned persistently, and ministered to extravagantly a group called Quakers who declined even to call her sister. This is a substantial woman, essentially composed of elements which cannot be downsized.
And you say that with conviction. And you write with great variety about these different occasions. I know you write other kinds of poems as well. And you've been writing well from childhood into, no, not quite old age.
But oh, come on.
We're getting there. Anyway, thank you very much, Janelle.
Thank you, Conrad.
Janelle Ravindahl.
This is WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. Find out more about Conrad Balliet and Conrad's Corner on our new website at wyso.org. NPR commentator Julie Zicafus is back, and today she tells us about her enormous egg. What's that you say? Well, take a listen.
My enormous egg. There's a bird that's been trying to get in my house. He pecks at the window all day. What does he want? A bird flinging himself against a window 10 hours a day does appear to be trying to get inside. Go outside and look at the window from the bird's perspective, and you'll see your own reflection. The bird is met with a rival who answers his every parry with a thrust, who sings at the same time he does, the height of avian rudeness. Most importantly, it's a rival who will not be vanquished and will not go away. Nothing in his experience has prepared him for that. As a child, I was fascinated with a black and white photograph I saw once in a book. It showed a male cardinal perched on the edge of a cement pond, feeding a beakful of insects to a school of hungry goldfish. Why would a cardinal feed goldfish? Well, a gaping goldfish mouth looks an awful lot like a baby bird's. Perhaps his nest had been predated. Perhaps caring for his own brood wasn't an option. Or perhaps a bunch of great big goldfish mouths, always open and hungry, were just too much for his birdie brain, and he chose to devote his summer, or perhaps the rest of his life, to trying to satisfy them. Another image that stays with me came from a college animal behavior textbook. A plump brown hen straddles an ostrich egg. One leg hangs down, she's got her feathers fluffed to the max. She's trying to keep that gigantic orb warm, and nothing's going to stop her. What she'd do with a baby ostrich as big as she is, she'll figure out later. For now, all she can think of is incubating that extra wonderful egg. I've stopped in mid-sentence several times while writing these paragraphs to check and see what my friends are saying on Facebook. It's my window rival, my school of hungry goldfish, my enormous egg. At my weakest, I'm no more powerful to resist its charms than the hopeful chicken who climbs on the giant egg. I've come to realize that the birds and I are all in the grip of a supernormal stimulus, one that elicits an enthusiastic but maladaptive response. The hallmark of humanity is our sociality. A few monks, hermits, and artists aside, most of us want and need to be in a community. So much the better if it's a community of friends. In life, it doesn't always work out that way. As much as we wish the people around us were those whose company we'd choose, we're sometimes loneliest in a crowd. Enter social networking. It's like fantasy sports applied to our lives. Suddenly, we've been granted the ability to build a network of people who all seem to like us, who LOL and ROTFL at our jokes, who are nice and polite, with no annoying habits, who are there for us at all hours. Look, I've got 986 friends. Let's go for 1,000. It sneaks up on us, the supernormal stimulus of social networking. It's nice to think that Homo sapiens has sufficient brain power to grasp the concept that flesh and blood relationships should trump fantasy social networking, but alas, there's plenty of evidence to the contrary. Close the computer. Go outside. Hug a human. Set a timer on your desk. We must remind ourselves, compel ourselves, to have more sense than a cardinal, to walk away from the window and go check on our nests.
Words of wisdom from commentator Julie Zicafus. Don't walk away from the radio yet. We've got plenty more WISO Weekend coming your way. Up next, school choice options have been growing exponentially in Ohio, often with the help of public funding. Charter schools, online schools, homeschooling, even public school collaboratives that draw school district boundaries differently. But as State Impact Ohio's Ida Liefskovsky reports, one of the fastest growing options this year is school vouchers.
Ebony Sawyer is a single mom of three in Cincinnati.
It's me, Superwoman does it all.
She works for the IRS, so we couldn't meet at her work. This being Cincinnati, we're sitting around the corner from her office in a Skyline Chili restaurant, the city's quintessential fast food joint, serving up, well, mostly chili.
And lemonade.
Okay, would you like mustard and onions on your cheese, Kenny's?
No onions.
No onions? Okay, it'll be $4.75.
Despite the fact that Sawyer is raising her kids alone and working full-time, she pays a lot of attention to their education.
Summer is not a break. You do have some time, you know, free time, but you're going to always learn.
She was disheartened when the report card for her kids' public school came out this year with less than impressive grades.
It's not necessarily failing in a sense that, okay, they're not learning anything, but it's not up to par to my standards.
So she submitted her kids' applications to a nearby private Catholic school, hoping to make use of the state's voucher program. It's called EdChoice, and the number of vouchers has more than doubled since the new state budget took effect July 1st. As grade schoolers, her kids can each get a scholarship worth a bit over $4,000. High schoolers are eligible for up to $5,000. She carries the application with her at all times.
This is it. I made two copies of it.
She says one of the things that turned her away from the EdChoice program initially is that most of the 312 private schools in the program are religious. That's largely because the majority of private schools in the state, more than 80%, are religious, most often Christian and very often Catholic.
I have a niece and a nephew that were in the EdChoice program. When they first got into it, I was like, you know, does it really help, that kind of thing? You can get education, because I never really wanted my children to go to Catholic school because I felt like they could get it somewhere else.
But eventually, she says she came to like that private schools tend to be smaller and more focused.
I think you do need that close-knit, family-like atmosphere with the goal of education in mind, as well as getting the religion in there if need be.
Last year, Ohio had 14,000 vouchers available to students who attend the worst performing schools in the state, schools that have been on academic watch or emergency for two of the last 3 years. This year's budget expanded that number to 30,000. Next year, it'll double again to 60,000. But Patrick Galloway of the Ohio Department of Education says the vouchers are not given out on a first-come, first-served basis.
So the pecking order is renewals.
That means first priority is students who used a voucher last year to make sure they don't have to switch schools all the time.
Then it goes to those who meet the income level for the federal poverty level.
The idea there is to provide choice to people who may not otherwise be able to afford a private school.
And then the final piece of that would be those who do not meet the level, but they may have to go into a lottery if it exceeds the amount of available vouchers.
Essentially, the third tier is every other child who attends a poorly performing public school. But the thing is, even when the pool of vouchers was much smaller, the program has never run out of vouchers for the first two groups. There's always been enough left over for that final third, the people who are interested in the program and do not meet the poverty level, people who could, theoretically, afford a private school. Chad Aldous is with the nonprofit group School Choice Ohio.
So the idea is with Ohio's program is it was never about income. The income was only a tiebreaker if there weren't enough seats available.
Aldous says the goal is to get good students out of bad public schools, and he would prefer a program that is available only to families that meet federal poverty guidelines.
Generally speaking, with the EdChoice Scholarship Program, there's between 85 and 90,000 students that are eligible each year. But typically, and unfortunately, it's the same students who are eligible each year.
But Aldous would also expand the program to any of the state's public schools, regardless of their academic rating. Ohio State University Assistant Professor Ann Allen's quarrel with the EdChoice program is not with the details. It's with the concept of school choice itself.
It's hard not to support parental choice, right? I mean, we all want people to be able to make the choices that they think is best for them. But what happens when we have a finite amount of money and we divert it across all of these choices is that we are taking big chunks of money away from our district schools. So it's hard for those schools to improve. It's hard for those schools to actually get better when, in fact, their resources are diminishing.
Ohio's constitution mandates that the state sets up a system of common schools. But Allen says the idea of schools as a public right and a gathering place for children of all backgrounds is being pushed aside in favor of giving parents more control over their children's schools.
We have really two choices when we think about how do we deal with problems. We can run away from them or we can fight them, the whole fight or flight kind of thing. And it used to be that we would need to use our voices to fight for what it is that we wanted in schools, but now we can just leave.
Allen says the students who get left behind at financially drained public schools are those who would need public support the most, the ones whose parents are too poor to drive their kids to a private school, even if they did get an EdChoice scholarship, or too busy juggling several jobs, or too disinterested in their child's education. But for people who are deeply invested in their kids' schooling, like Ebony Sawyer in Cincinnati, more choice makes it easier to ensure their kids get a good education. In fact, Sawyer says if EdChoice doesn't work out for her kids, she'll switch to the night shift to homeschool them. Tomorrow, we'll take a closer look at that burgeoning segment of the school choice movement. For State Impact Ohio, I'm Ida Liaskovsky.
State Impact Ohio is an education reporting collaboration of NPR and Ohio Public Radio stations WCPN, WKSU, and WOSU. For more education reporting, go to their website, stateimpact.npr.org/Ohio. This is WISO Weekend.
Welcome to Politics Ohio. I'm Emily McCord, and I'm joined today by Bill Cohen with the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks for being here.
It's a pleasure.
I want to ask you first about a study released this week from a progressive think tank, and it's questioning tax breaks that are included in the state budget, and it's coming at a time that the budget is very tight. So what does that study find?
Well, it finds that there's about $400 million a year in new or extended tax breaks. It's basically saying, hey, legislators, don't give away tax money when we just passed one of the tightest state budgets in decades and had to slash spending for schools and universities and poor people's programs and programs for the elderly and the sick and abused children and so forth. If anything, we need more money, not less money. So there are several in here. There's the repeal of the estate tax. That's probably the biggest. But there are other ones, too. There are tax breaks for rehabilitating historical buildings. There's a big tax break in case somebody sets up a mammoth computer data center, and nearly a dozen overall.
So is there any response on the study from Republicans?
Well, yes, Republicans are sticking with their point of view that, hey, these tax breaks are good. They may not directly create jobs, but in general, they'll make Ohio more business-friendly and friendly to entrepreneurs. And when you do that, the Republicans keep arguing you're going to create more jobs. They also add that these tax breaks that were passed in the new state budget don't really affect the current state budget. They were put into the new state budget, but they really, the tax breaks don't take effect for at least another couple years.
This week, another issue is officially making it to the ballot, and that's regarding the federal health care mandate. And I'm wondering if you can paint the scene for me as we head into November. Is this issue going to be as contentious as the collective bargaining law is shaping up to be?
It will be contentious, but not the fever pitch that we've seen over Senate Bill 5, the collective bargaining law. This issue, the health care issue, does pit the same two basic groups, liberals versus conservatives. This ballot issue was pushed by conservatives who don't like the new federal health care law, especially the mandate that everyone, virtually everyone, buy health insurance. They say, how dare the federal government order people to buy anything? These Tea Party activists say they don't like it, and they're putting this proposal on the ballot, a constitutional amendment that basically says Ohioans should be exempt from that that insurance purchase. So we're going to see liberal groups come out against that, conservative groups for it, and there may be millions of dollars spent and a lot of emotions and a lot of manpower spent on both sides, but I don't think it's going to be the tens of millions of dollars that are going to be pouring into Ohio from national groups and activists on both sides in the other debate. That's the other issue, the collective bargaining issue.
And Secretary of State John Husted did release the order of the ballot issues in November. And what can we expect to see there?
Well, the first issue is going to be a somewhat less controversial issue put onto the ballot by legislators. And that's one that says we're not going to force judges to retire at age 70. We're going to lift that to age 76. There are some arguments on both sides, but that's not a hugely controversial proposal. That'll be number one. Number two will be the referendum on the collective bargaining law. And number three will be this health care proposal that the Tea Party folks have been pushing.
Now, ballot issues can sometimes have some interesting wording. Is there any idea on what that's going to look like yet?
No, but you're right. And especially on the collective bargaining issue, this is going to be, we may have a huge debate next week when the Ohio Ballot Board meets. Those five members, they're dominated by Republicans. They're going to decide how to word these ballot issues. And there's some indication that Republicans who dominate may try to deal with the wording on who gets to be on the vote no side on that collective bargaining issue. Usually referendums, and that's what this proposal is, referendums are what happens when a group hates a bill, a new law that legislators have passed. The activists go out on the street, collect hundreds of thousands of petition signatures, and that is supposed to put the proposal, the new law itself, up for a vote. We've had these 10 times before in Ohio. Usually the people who hate the new law get to be on the vote no side, usually the easier side to be on to convince people to vote no. And backers of the defenders of the new law have to be on the vote yes side. But some Republicans have been telling us, oh, no, the ballot board could switch that around. and make unions and their allies and other critics of this new collective bargaining law could force them to be on the vote yes side. So we'll be at that ballot board to see what happens.
Well, we'll look forward to that report. I've been speaking with Bill Cohen from the Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Thanks so much for being here.
Been a pleasure. Thanks.
This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac for the sixth week of middle summer. The cricket to the frog's bassoon, his shrillest time is keeping. The sickle of yon setting moon, the meadow mist is reaping. John Greenleaf Whittier wrote that capsule of middle summer in 1847, and it's all still true today. Under the waning moon, crickets are filling the nights with their August songs. And when you hear the crickets, the first purple blossoms of the tall ironweed open in the fields and blackberries are getting ripe. Grackles have begun to come together, flocking in anticipation of autumn. Starlings feed together now in the bare wheat fields. On the East Coast, shorebirds are beginning to move south, often stopping to rest on North Carolina's outer banks. In the honeysuckles of the Midwest, adult robins teach their young migration calls. Thistledown unravels completely to the cricket song, and seed pods form on the trumpet creepers. Ragweed heads up for August as honewort and wood nettle, mallow and tall meadow rue go to seed. Early cottonwoods are weathering. Patches of yellow appear on the weaker ash trees. Black walnut leaves start to fall. All across the country, summer's second last wave of wildflowers, the biennial goro, the Joe pieweed, monkey flower, tall coneflower, white snakeroot, jump seed, virgin's bower, field thistle, and Japanese knotweed all are blooming in the open fields and along the fence rows. Pods of the touch-me-not burst at the slightest movement. Dogbane seed pods swing in the wind. And to the song of the crickets, grapes and pokeweed berries darken in the meadow mist under the setting moon. This is Bill Felker with Poor Will's Almanac. I'll be back again next week with notes for the final week of middle summer. In the meantime, listen for the crickets and watch for the meadow mist, foretaste of August and September.
Bill Felker contributes to newspapers nationwide, including the Yellow Springs News. Bill resides in Yellow Springs. Poor Will's Almanac is also available as a podcast at WYSO.org.
That's it for this week's edition of WYSO Weekend. But before we go, here's Sarah Buckingham to give us a sneak peek at the Sunday Documentary Hour.
Last week, we aired a special hour of radio stories produced in WYSO's Community Voices Training Program. If you missed it, look for it on our website. We're very proud of our trainees. This week, Destination DIY returns at 6 p.m., and WTF is back at 11. Tonight's episode of Destination DIY is about do-it-yourself rituals, secular or spiritual, large and small. Host Julie Sabatier brings you stories about an adoption ceremony, home funerals, do-it-yourself weddings, and inventive traditions centered around breakfast cereals and bedtime stories. That's coming up tonight at 6 p.m. Then, at 11 on WTF, Mark Maron talks to Margaret Cho and the late Mike DiStefano. In one of DiStefano's final interviews, he talks with Mark Maron about his AIDS diagnosis.
So I met this beautiful girl, Fran, and she had been a recovering addict as well, and she was also positive.
And then you moved down here?
Yeah, we moved to Florida.
Why?
Because of the health, because dying. We were dying.
Ugh.
You know, we came down here. I was 22. She's a little older than me. She was about 28 or 29.
Yeah.
And we literally came to Florida like two old people would do, Mark. And that's what my life was at that time. And I didn't know how long I would live. I was told from the doctors,
Who knew then?
Back then, yeah. People got the virus. They died in 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
You know, so I expected that to happen.
So you come down here, you're with her. You got an apartment by the beach or something?
Yeah, we got an apartment. We had a nice apartment in West Palm Beach. You know, I was playing tennis. I learned how to play tennis. You know, I went from trying to be a heroin smuggler to a tennis player.
And you're going to meetings, you're staying straight.
Yeah, I was staying straight. I knew that was the key to the whole thing, was staying straight. You know, I can't go using drugs again. That's not going to give me the kind of life I'm looking for.
That's coming up tonight at 11 on WTF with Mark Maron. On member-supported 91.3 WYSO, Yellow Springs, Dayton, Springfield, and online at wyso.org. I'm Jerry Kenney. Thanks for joining us. Coming up next, The Book Nook.